Hello and welcome to Wine Blast, the podcast that brings wine to life. I'm Susie Barry and I'm here as ever with my husband and fellow master of wine, Peter Richards.
Hello.
And today we have got, we wanted to start with winners. Mm. We've got prizes, we've got some thank yous.
I think lots of fun stuff really. I almost
felt
a bit
so.
like a quiz show host.
Oh, that's exciting.
Right, there we go.
Bit different.
Good question to start with. If you're going to be a quiz show host, who would you be?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really watch quiz show. Claudia Winkleman? Does she count? She's not really a quiz show host,
really.
Is she? But I quite fancy being Claudia. I've always wanted that fringe.
I think you just want to be Claudia Winkleman.
I just want the fringe. The dark hair and the fringe. You always want, you don't
yeah,
have,
you can
don't
have
you?
That. Well, maybe look to buy a wig.
She's
later.
Cool.
On. Who would I be? Bog Monkhouse? Is that a bit old-fashioned?
A bit old-fashioned.
Okay.
A little bit.
Can I be out on deck then?
I don't think
Please.
It could be both of them. Maybe you chop you in half.
Put
that's perfect. You'd be about the right size.
Fuse them into one in some genetic cloning experiment
gone wrong.
So this episode is quite a fun one, isn't it, we've got coming up?
It is. It's not a quiz show, but it is
it's
quite
fun. It's
not
a quiz show. We've got elements.
It's exciting. It's striking new ground,
yeah,
I would say.
So it's about Chile. Chile had its Independence Day just last week, the 18th of September. Feliz Dies Ocho. We should be saying to each other.
Spray again.
We're getting to the beating heart of Chilean wine in this episode. Or, I mean, I suppose maybe phrasing it a different way, looking at its future, because that's the exciting stuff when it comes to Chile. So this is Chile, but maybe not as we all know it so far.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new side to Chile. We're going to be visiting a brand new vineyard, just a stone's throw from a smoking volcano crater.
A virtual volcano visit.
How's that for excitement?
It's quite fun.
Roller coaster stuff, this. We're also going to be visiting a game-changing project, which is aiming to promote inclusivity and diversity by working with indigenous Mapuche people. Got a little bit of a clip to put in here.
To by whet way our of, appetite.
By way of a taster.
Yeah, Chile always has been a little bit shy, you know, not very brave enough to try other things. But I can tell you that in the last, I would say 10 years at least, Chile changed completely. So today, if you want to take some risk, if you want to play with your taste, with your mouth, play with Chile.
If you want to play with your mouth.
Yeah,
can't wait.
That's a thought.
Sounds like fun. Yeah. But before that, in our last episode, Judging Britain's Best Wines Part 2, we offered free award-winning wines from WineGB, from the WineGB Awards. And they are pretty amazing wines, aren't they?
Amazing.
I mean, but mainly, thanks to everyone who took part in this competition. All we asked was for you to send in your email address, your details, and that was it. That's all you had to do to enter. And we were blown away. I mean, not just by the quantity of entries, but also all those lovely notes that people sent in.
I mean, really.
Is
this a way of feeling good about yourself, you know, running a competition to offer people free wine and people will be really nice to you?
Well,
I don't know. I think they were genuine messages. So thank you, everyone.
I loved them.
They were much appreciated, actually. Some definitely made us chuckle. In fact, we've got some to share, haven't we?
So should we do that?
Because
they were too lovely not to.
So Alicia said, I absolutely love your podcast and have been listening to them over the last few months on my walks. I often end up sharing some snippets with my partner, who's a sommelier, and is really surprised and proud when I ask him about things you talked about in your episode. So thank you. I hope it's the nice stuff. It's sort of highbrow stuff.
He's probably thinking we know
I'm
nothing.
Looking forward to many more walks with your podcast.
I've got from Aaron. Aaron, I genuinely love your podcast. So interesting and informative, but also so fun and unstuffy. That's definitely what we like to hear. Far and away, the best wine podcast out there.
We are blowing our own trumpets, aren't
we?
Definitely. Mirta wrote, thank you for the amazing podcast. They are my absolute favourite. I'm a WSET diploma student and your podcasts provide amazing context to my studies. Please keep up the great work. Hello, Mirta. Thank you.
Adam, I have listened to your podcast since you started via Apple Podcasts and it has kept me going during lockdown. I tell you what, Adam, it's kept us going as well.
Yeah, it's mutual.
Along with a lot of wine.
Stephen says, just getting into the world of wine after becoming fascinated during a WSET course, Wine and Spirit Education Trust. Love the podcast. Fun, informative. So thanks for all the work you put into it.
And finally, Daryl, thoroughly loving the pod. I like that. You know, not podcast, pod. Mm. Keep going. Let's just hope the UK doesn't start growing torrent heads.
Yeah, I love that.
I think that might be something to do with
He's
me.
He's properly listened to your prejudices,
hey-ho,
hasn't he?
There we go.
Everyone, for those. Do you know what? It's so sort of buoying to hear those sort of messages.
I mean,
thank you.
Yeah. I mean, really, if we're honest, we love doing this, don't we? We love doing the podcast. We will be totally honest about that. But, you know, what fuels us and really keeps us going is your feedback, because why would we do it otherwise? You know, what would be the point? And so it's from all around the world. I mean, we've apparently got listeners in more than 100 countries now. You all do matter to us. We love the fact you're listening. And just, yeah, keep in touch.
A big shout out, talking about all around the world, to you guys in the mighty USA. Thank you for your support, which is massive. And we've got some great episodes lined up with a US focus coming soon. Hello also to Australia, Canada, France, Netherlands, Taiwan, Ireland, Norway and Sweden. That's our top 10.
Are they our top 10 countries?
Also Lithuania, Reunion, Nepal, Uzbekistan, Qatar, Cameroon, Macau and the Isle of Man.
Wow. What do you think they all... Anyway, I was going to say, what do they all make
hello
of us, but hey.
Everyone, wherever you are. Thank you also for all the questions and comments that have been coming in via SpeakPipe. It is so lovely to hear your voices. I'm sorry if we haven't been able to feature your input yet. We will try our best. Also, thank you so much for the reviews. We mentioned this last time, but I just wanted to read one out from JDP Walker, who said on Apple Podcasts, which made us laugh, "Love these guys almost as much as wine. Great podcast, educational, invigorating, damn funny too. Thanks, guys."
I've got one as well, actually. Can I do another review? It's from Jimenez C, and it says, "I feel like I learn loads without noticing I was learning."
That's the idea.
That's good, isn't it? Yeah. Lots of fun too.
As for JDP Walker, just come back. You should really love the wine more. Please focus on the wine, not us.
A bit of both. Just drink while you're listening, obviously. Anyway, talking of sharing the love, competition winners.
Come on, competition
winners.
We need
to move on.
Yes.
So we are going to live here now, draw our two competition winners.
So we've got a spittoon bucket.
Are we going to talk about what these prizes are first? I think we need to say what we've got. So briefly, these are the reason we're saying this is because they are fantastic cases of wine. So we've got six bottles in each case. Case one for our first winner, which we'll draw in just a moment, is going to contain Breaky Bottom Cuvée Michel Moreau, which is a trophy-winning wine. Rheims Classic from Hampshire was a gold. Gusborne Guinevere, lovely still Chardonnay, a gold. Harrow and Hope Rosé Fizz, gold. Chapeldown Bacchus Fizz, which was a silver. And then Simpson's Chardonnay, again from Kent, silver.
Lovely wines, but I match it with case two, which it features Chapeldown Cœur de Cuvée trophy winning fizz.
That's about, you know, as Louis good as
Pommery,
it gets.
Louis Pommery, England, gold winning fizz from the champagne maker, obviously. Bluebell Hindley Ruby, gold. Sharpham Stop Ferment, gold. Gusbourne Barrel Reserve Pinot Noir, silver. And a Black Book Painter of Light Chardonnay, another favourite of ours, a silver. So
absolutely
two amazing cases there.
Right, let's go. Okay. So we've got two cases, we're looking for two winners.
Two winners.
Are you
going
to go first?
I will go
you
first.
Go first, out of the bucket.
Okay.
Out of the spittoon, actually. It's not even a bucket.
Right, winner number one is Jonathan Quaintrell Evans from Newcastle. Jonathan, well done. You wrote, we've got the printouts here, you've written in your email, "I'm sure you're tired of hearing from people like..." No, we're not. We're not tired of hearing people like
never
you, because you're a winner. And also, he says, "I'd also like to thank you for your fab podcast, which I've only recently discovered, but I find absolutely brilliant. I'm always looking forward to the next one." Well, there you go.
Oh, Jonathan, well done. Right, who else?
My turn.
Oh, let's have a rattle around. Our second winner for that fantastic case is Clive Wilfred.
Clive.
So what does Clive say? Clive says, "Your podcasts have been such a revelation, especially during this particular period we are all in. My wife and I would absolutely love to win your case." Well, you have done. She is still not convinced about English wines, but she will be. Honestly, Clive, believe me. And he says, Clive says, I need to convince the Frenchie. Well, she's going to be convinced.
I think she is.
I promise you.
I think hopefully there's a chance of convincing there.
Frenchie makes me think of Greece.
Well done, Jonathan. Well done, Clive. There are winners. Thank you, everyone, for taking part. It's so kind of you to enter. Thanks also to WineGB and all the producers for the wines. Time for chili?
Time for chili. So we're all familiar with chili and wine, but you, Mr. Richards, you know chili very well. You live there, you've worked there, you've written books. I mean, goodness, you did your Master of Wine dissertation on Chilean syrup.
For my sins.
You chair the Chile panel at the Decanter World Wine Awards. In fact, this was your 16th year, wasn't it? I mean, seriously. How old are you?
Oh, my God.
But you visit regularly and I'm actually including this past February, just before lockdown. But you came back, I would say, from this trip, more animated about it than I have ever seen you before. Why was that?
So I think it's easy to get excited about any wine country you visit, isn't it? We do this. We all fall victim to this. You go and it's really exciting. But Chile is really exciting. There's just constant improvements. I visit so regularly and every time I go back, it's like a different wine world. It's been transformed. And, you know, and this time what excited me was a number of different things, which we'll get into, but it just seemed different. It seemed this time like it was a distinct new phase, a new era of Chilean wine, a new sort of approach, almost a new mentality, I think, that I found really exciting.
So, the classic image of Chile is essentially reliable, good value, maybe with a few sort of icon-style tricks up its sleeve. But now, what's different?
So, I think really, on the one hand, there's a sort of shift in the sense of gravity, is how I'd say it. There's still, of course, the reliable, good value stuff that's gonna carry on. But it's more the it's not just a few weird, funky guys in the middle of nowhere on a hillside doing some weird stuff. It's actually the big guys. So the sort of big players are kind of refining their art on the one hand, going a bit more European, a bit more elegant, a bit more kind of towards refreshment, lower alcohols, a bit more subtlety in the wines. Like I say, not just with the East Terrace wines, also with the likes of, the big commercial hitters like Cabernet Sauvignon. I mean, Cabernet is what, a third of Chile's plantings, and that in total is about, the total planting, I think, about 137,000 hectares. So a third of that, 30% roughly, is Cabernet. That's massive. And it's Cabernet where we're seeing these sort of slightly more elegant, refreshing wines coming from. But also other things that are big, like Sauvignon Blanc, Merlot, Carmenere, Chardonnay. But all of them, they're just getting more interesting.
And why is that happening?
Well, I think there's lots of reasons, really. There was some are practical. Like, for example, the 2016 vintage was really, really rainy. It was a horrific vintage. But what it did was it forced loads of people to harvest really early before they wanted to. And what actually people realised was once they got the fruit into the winery, once they'd made it, you can harvest early in Chile and you can get quite refreshing, elegant wines from it.
But
things like that, accidents really. Exactly, they're ripe. You don't really struggle for ripeness too much in Chile. It's usually the opposite problems. So, I think winemakers have learned a lot from a kind of series of hard vintages recently. Some have been really, really hot as well. But, I'd also like to think that there's a kind of generational issue. We've got a younger generation coming through, starting to exert their influence now, I'd say. We've seen them around for a long time, but now they're starting to take over. They're starting to be in positions of power. And these guys have tasted widely. They know the global classics. And whereas their parents, with great respect, haven't in the same sort of way, they've travelled. They've kind of taken the time to get a benchmark on the world of wine. And I think they're a bit more keyed in to how to build a sustainable industry. It's not about just selling the wines. It's not about what do you want, Mr. Wine Buyer, when you come. This is my wine, like it or not. If you don't, go to the next guy. That's really, really important. I think Chile has to understand it can't pander to the sort of bargain basement. The need to forge identity is a long-term task, and building long-term value in is exactly what Chile needs to do. So you can't do that with identity kit wines. You need wines that are unique, that sort of speak of Chile and the places and people. You need a USP. It's not easy to do it, but that's what's going to be good for Chile in the long term, and I think that's what's happening now. That's exciting.
So it's partly to do with the people, obviously, but it's surely also about places and how the vineyard locations are changing as well.
Totally.
As part of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just that in itself, because just doing weird vineyards for the sake of themselves, well, there's not much point in that. It's Chile used to be all about the Central Valley, this sort of central depression in the middle of the country that's kind of referred to as an agricultural paradise. It's certainly, reliably warm, pretty fertile. You, in the past, have been able to get hold of water pretty easily. Then in the 90s, the country started expanding, into more marginal territory like hillsides and cooler areas.
In terms of wine.
Exactly. Cooler, and it's all relative, but cooler in terms of wine, like Casablanca in the coast and, into the mountains. And more recently, we've started to see pioneering projects, really pushing the extremes in a good and meaningful and long-term way and really sort of broaching new ground for Chilean viticulture, which, exciting.
So there have been some interesting projects in the north, into Atacama territory, which is dry, but there are cooler parts nearer to the coast too. Mm. You even mentioned a wine project on Easter Island, which you know, which is Chilean territory, albeit in the mid-Pacific.
Just starting, but how exciting.
Yeah, I mean, what a thought. but anyway, what we're looking at today is not Easter Island, maybe another episode, but what I think is getting you particularly excited at the moment is the South.
Yeah, the South is the future.
Yeah.
It really is, and it's so exciting. So South in Chile, let's remember, means cooler, rainier and more cloudy. It's sort of more classic European winemaking conditions, really. You've got to remember that the far south of Chile is sort of into Antarctic territory. So, you know, lots of reasons behind this. But Chile has had a decade-long drought. It's really serious. And, you know, with climate change on the horizon as well, things are just, you know, long-term success, I think, means searching out this kind of, you know, conditions. In terms of wine, what you get in the south of Chile is fresh acidity, tense, kind of quite structured wines, very elegant wines, particularly suitable for white wines and sparkling wines as well, but also some sort of, you know, lighter reds like Pinot Noir. So I think we're going to see some world-class sparkling wine emerging from the south of Chile in due course, and also some world-class white and in due course reds.
Fighting talk. Okay, yeah. So I do want to ask you more, but I think we'll save it for later. And we're also going to get more, I think, into the politics, history, maybe social issues too. But just coming back to your trip to the South in February, there were three particular projects, all very different, that I know you wanted to talk about. And we're going to dive in with the one furthest south. So this is a pioneering project which you travelled to see with winemaker Aurelio Montes.
Aurelio,
sometimes called Junior because his dad shares the same name and is a fairly big cheese in Chilean wine.
Well, they're both big cheeses these days.
Well, anyway. But Montes as a company as well is a well-known Chilean producer. Yeah. They're based in Colchagua, but it's also as a company been developing vineyards in the more marginal areas. Now, this particular vineyard is one of the most southerly in Chile, if not the world. So properly kind of off the charts.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, at the time of this trip, you were telling me how hard you were working. And then I hear this.
Aurelio, we are sitting in the most magical place. We are on the island of Añihue, if I've said that right.
Exactly.
Near Chiloé. These are islands in the far south of Chile. Traditionally, a land of potatoes and seafood and fishing.
Exactly.
And mythical stories. Now, we are sitting here and I'm looking over an amazing vineyard. New vineyard, relatively recently planted. We can hear the sounds of nature all around us. The bees are buzzing, the birds are calling. On the way here, we saw dolphins and we saw seals and we saw penguins. Why have you planted a vineyard here?
Wow. Yeah, it's a really good question. Well, we are Montes, as you know, we are known as a pioneer company, as a pioneer winery, where my father and me, both winemakers, we love what we do. And we know that Chile is a diverse and amazing country where you go from the north to the south. You can find from the east to the west, different type of climate, different type of, you know, soil. So, as you know, as curious we are, we decide to go far, far south. Remember that South America, when you say south, means cooler. In the North Hemisphere, a lot of people say south is warmer. No. South means cooler. And why? Because with all this global warming, we're a little bit afraid about what is going on, you know, in the wine regions. So we need to know, we love to know, or we want to know what happened in the very south of Chile. Why here? Why in the middle of an unknown island in the middle of nowhere? Because this area is known for, you know, for, I don't know how you say, but for the yachts, when you sail, to sleep here, because it's very protected.
I said to you, isn't it too rainy? Isn't it too windy? And you were saying the reason you found this place is that your dad, who's a great sailor,
exactly,
would come and anchor here to sleep for the night. And this is one of the places that's really protected from the winds.
Exactly. And that's why we, after, you know, coming here and say, wow, why we normally sleep here when we come here with the jet? It's because this area, it's protected against the wind.
It's a little bit warmer than the rest of the island, being so far away, 1,200 kilometers south from Santiago.
We're on our way to the Antarctic, basically.
Exactly.
But you think you can make it, you think you can make this work. So this is very cool. It's very rainy for Chile. Most of the vineyards are in much warmer, drier areas, which is easier to make wine. But maybe you don't make such interesting wine from these kind of predictably regularly warm areas. Do you think you're going to be able to make a wine here that really is going to be fine wine, that is going to be something special?
I believe it. Definitely, I believe it. I don't know how it's going to end at the end, because I would love to go faster in my life and to really, you know, be
you
able
get
to
one
harvest.
Chance a year,
exactly, you? Exactly. So it's what I believe is that if you don't take the risk, you're never going to know. So for us, it's really, really, you know, amazing to be able to be here in a unique place. And that is not because you want to be in a unique place in the middle of nowhere. It's because we believe that also being this unique place, we have the limit conditions to grow grapes. Not every grape, but the grapes that we choose to put here, we believe that some of them maybe are going to be able to ripe, and we're going to be able to produce an amazing and different wine.
So you've got things like Riesling planted here, Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Pinot Gris, Gewürztraminer. You're trying Albarino, the grape from Galicia in Spain. You're trying quite a few things here.
Exactly. Because we don't know exactly, because of the soil that we have here, because of the climate, is very, very... I will not even say that it's in the limit. It's in the other side of the limit.
So it's beyond the limit.
Exactly.
And we're here, you know, the sea is about 50 meters away.
Exactly.
Lapping in. So we're seriously close to the sea.
It's very close.
The sea here is a little bit warmer than typically in Chile, though, you said, in the Humboldt Current, which is a very cold Antarctic current, which gets the west of Chile. Actually, we're a bit, because we're the eastern side of this island.
Exactly.
The sea here is a little bit warmer, so you don't get so much issues with coldness. But you talked about being daring. You've got to be brave. Do you think it's fair to say that Chile hasn't been brave enough?
I will say that if you go back to the beginning of the wine industry, yeah, Chile always has been a little bit shy, not very brave enough to try other things. But I can tell you that in the last, I would say 10 years, at least, Chile changed completely. Now we are planting everywhere. We're taking the risk. Mm-hmm. I know that's expensive. I know that's very risky. I know that you have to wait at least 5, 6, 7, up to 10 years to really get the result of the place. But I'm so happy to see Chile, a new Chile, where you can try really amazing Riesling planted in a very high altitude in some places in Colchagua, where you can go to the south, to Lago Ranco. This is in the middle of the south of Chile, in the lake areas, and you find some other white grapes. And then you go to the Atacama Desert, where you have also some wineries working there with some amazing wines. So today, if you want to take some risk, if you want to play with your taste, with your mouth, play with Chile. Definitely, we have amazing wines here.
But in short, the future for Chilean wine, how would you sum it up in a few words?
The future in the Chilean wine, I would say, will be definitely diversity. That will, as a final word, I would say diversity is our future. Quality, definitely, yes. Chile used to be known as a cheap, easy drink wine. Today, we still have quite a bit of that, but most of the wineries are really pushing the high-quality wines because we have an amazing country, amazing terroir, amazing conditions to compete with the best of the world. So now it's time for Chile.
So a new Chile and one founded on the south.
Quite possibly. You know, but let's remember that the south does have quite a bit of history as well. You know, areas like Itata in the south have had vineyards for hundreds of years, you know, since the mid-16th century when the conquistadors first planted them. So there is history. I mean, Itata is a lot further north than where we were in Anyue. But, you know, I think the way of looking at it is that Chileans, and I'm sure they'd forgive me for saying it, I'm sure Aurelio would forgive me for saying it, is by nature, they tend to be quite risk averse. I mean,
yeah,
they're quite,
I think we've
English
talked about this
away.
Yeah, yeah, in a lovely, they're terribly polite and lovely.
Exactly.
Aren't they?
And also, but that makes them, there's a practicality issue. You know, most winemakers live in Santiago, which, like most of the population, I think it's about a third of the population or nearly half, live in Santiago, in the capital. So it's difficult to start farming 1,000 kilometres to the south. You know, yeah, of course it is. So there are challenges, and there are challenges beyond distances as well. You know, logistics, like for example. It's a lovely thing that Ariel said. On the island he is, well, on the, it's a group of islands, really. There's only one tractor. So you have to wait for a particular low tide in order to get it from the main island to the vineyard island. And that happens once every 3 weeks.
Oh, no, I mean, seriously, how do you make wine like that? That's incredible.
But the point is, you know, there are all these crazy challenges, but, you know, the quality of the wines, the nature of the wines, they sort of just speak for themselves.
I mean, but not all of these projects are actually making wine yet, are they?
No, that's true.
Monte's only just planted, as far as I understand. There were no grapes on the vines when you visited.
Yes, we tried to find some grapes on the vines and they disappeared.
That's a long way to go to find no grapes.
No, we're all a bit disappointed. The lovely chap explained that I think they'd done an over-vigorous pruning and the grape, small bunches, but you know, these are vines. They didn't really expect too many vines. They've only been planted in a couple of years ago, so that's not surprising. But you know, I mean, in terms of precedent, there are other wine projects, you know, in this sort of area. I've tasted wines from an experimental planting in Chile Chico, which is further south from here,
even further.
And then not too far away, you've got the likes of Casa Silva at Lago Ranco, which is making great wines. Trapi del Bueno, Ribera, Pellin. You know, I think, you know, between these producers, you've got sparkling wine, you've got Riesling, you've got Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, you know, and they're all making top wines, I'd say, you know, that really showcase the potential of this area. So it can be done.
Yeah. And then there was another new project that you particularly wanted to mention, wasn't there?
Yeah. So we're going to move on to the De Martino brothers, the lovely De Martino brothers, Sebastian and Marco. They're fourth generation growers. Now, we tend to know the name De Martino. It's based in Maipo, a traditional producer based in Maipo. It's been going for a while. But Sebastian and Marco, together with their winemaker Marcelo Retamal, have been sort of pioneering the move to push into marginal areas all around the country to identify
just
the classic sites.
Maipo's more central, though.
Exactly. You know? Maipo's in that central area near Santiago. But there's some, you know, obviously top quality Cabernet come from there.
Yeah.
But what these guys have done is push out of those areas into the more extreme to just, I suppose, to find the sites of the future. You know, we all know their skin contact Moscatel called Viejas Tinajas, that brand, which has expanded since. But, you know, initially, I think it was about a decade ago, they launched it with the Moscatel Old Vines in Itata, fermented in Tinajas, these big old clay jars.
So
you know, that was a game changer.
So that was completely new to ferment in a Tinaca.
Well, but funnily enough, you saw these Tinajas in every wine estate. They would be on the front lawns. You know, you 20 years ago, when I was 30 years ago when I was there, you go and all these wine estates would have them on the front lawns. Now they've all disappeared from the front lawns, funnily enough, because everyone's using them to make wine
in
again.
In the winery.
You know, and these were being made
so these were like ornamental.
Hundreds of years ago. Yeah, they were used.
Oh,
then they became ornaments and now they've gone back into service because it's become trendy.
Amazing.
But, you know, making really, really interesting wines. And now the De Martino brothers are doing something new again. And I caught up with Sebastian in his car at their vineyard on the slopes of the Villa Rica volcano, overlooking the Villa Rica Lake. Which is about, just to set the scene, about 400 kilometres north of the Montes project in Anhui, but still, you know, about 800 kilometres south of Santiago. It's in the mainland, in towards the Andes Mountains. Sebastian, we are on the slopes of an active volcano, which is smoking behind us, in a known earthquake zone, in an area of Chile called Pucón, which is almost too cold to ripen grapes properly, and you've planted a vineyard. Are you mad?
I don't think mad is the right word. I think it's we like this place and we believe we can make a great fine wine from here.
It's a really, really special place. I mean, we're actually sitting in your car because it's a bit noisy outside. It's a bit windy. But we've got this beautiful view over Villa Rica Lake. We've got the volcano behind us. It's a beautifully little snow-capped volcano. And we're looking over these new plantings, which are very, very young. It feels like a really, the air is so fresh here. It feels like a really special place to make wine. Are you convinced you could make it work here?
We believe we can. We've been thinking about this project for about 10 years. Part of this project is that we love this place, but we also have traveled the world to similar places to see what can be done. And of course, there's risk involved in a project like this, but this has to do more with something that we envision and something that we're passionate about. And we believe firmly that we're going to make great wines from here. How are they going to turn out to be? That's another question. But we have our ideas, but I think we need the place, you know, I think the place needs to talk about that, not ourselves.
So you're going to be you're going to adapt to the wines that you make, or you're going to wait for to see what wines work best here before you make decisions about what you're going to try to
yeah,
do.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, you know, everything we planted was consciously in a way that it's, we're looking for fine vine growing. So very poor soils, basalt like.
Yeah, so you said some of them are just direct lava flows. The last eruption here was 2015, and you've got some.
Exactly. So we're virtually planted in lava, and that which of course take way longer than we expected at the beginning, because it's we have to break the lava like by hand. Like, yeah. But it's we firmly believe, you know, what we planted here is gonna show up wine that it's gonna tell the story of the place. But more importantly, as well, we're thinking about a wine that it's in the leaning towards fine wine. Mm. So low yields, good drainage soils, good exposition, struggling to ripe a small amount of grapes. Mm. And we believe that we're going to achieve something special.
Now, you've got Riesling, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir planted here. You've told me you're not aiming to make sparkling wine initially. You want to make still wines, but you're not sure of the styles yet. Do you have a feel? Do you have a feel for the kind of thing that, in your mind, you must do?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you see the soils, we know it's going to be minerality in the wines. Mm.
You said that part of the inspiration was this because you guys have traveled a lot and you like wines from Etna and wines from Santorini, which are sort of volcanic wines. Yeah, what is it about those wines that you think
we like? The mineral character of them. Mm. And we're in a country that we have probably more volcanoes than any other country, and this is the only real volcanic wine probably because we're sitting in a volcano, and an active volcano.
Yeah.
So we're looking for that mineral frame. I think we think that the wines are going to have that backbone.
And what do you mean, just to press you a bit on that, because mineral is quite a nebulous term. What do you mean by mineral wines, really? What's it, because it can be quite personal as well. What does it mean to you personally?
I like the flintiness on them, a flinting component in the aromas, but also a backbone that goes in the center of it. So a nice structure, but a flinty element that I find in many other wines, especially from Etna in particular. Mm. When you try those Nerellos or those wines, I find that element in some good growers. Again, I think growers are very important. There's an influence of the growers in each vinification and the work in the vineyard, but I think you can find those elements here. I agree, minerality is a very open, a misuse word at times as well.
And you say, you know, Chile does have an incredible amount of volcanoes. It's incredibly mountainous. I think 80% of the country is mountainous. Do you think that the country hasn't explored these kind of limits before?
Yeah, I think we haven't. Most of the growing is still in the central areas. Don't get me wrong, the central areas are great potential for vine growing. In gravel, I believe there's good gravel to do Cabernet and Cabernet, which we own in Maipo, we're very proud of. And we're
so
them.
Just to explain, you have De Martino is an established traditional producer in Maipo, and but what you've done lately is go around the country making wines, really, really interesting wines from all different places around the country, and particularly in the south, in Itata, with your Tinajas project. You've really explored that area. And now you've come here.
Yeah, this another look. We always say Maipo is about being classic and evolving a house style. Itata is about old vines and funk.
Funk, love that. Yeah, gonna have a bit of funk in wine.
Yeah, exactly. Like drinkability. You know, like we have granite, we have Gobelet Grown. If you go to Bourjolais, it's very similar. Like, come on, like it's brilliant. It's that encapsulated fruit that we love to drink. That's vino, the concept of vino, which I love. And here is about a different project. I think this is a project that is more in the marginal in terms of ripening. The soils are really poor, and we're looking for a wine that is going to be definitely, or we believe is going to be complex and very honest to the place. So we want you to be sitting here with a glass of wine and say, okay, I understand the wine. I don't need to talk about it. You just, okay, I get it. that's very important in that regards.
Well, I look forward to, in the future, coming back here, sitting here with a glass of wine made here on the slopes of Villarrica volcano, looking over the Villarrica lake. It's a wonderful place. Best of luck with it.
Oh, thank you, Peter. Thank you.
So, wine from the side of a smoking volcano. Really?
I told you I was working hard. You
know, well, it might have been dangerous. I'm not sure how hard it was.
But, well...
So, when do you got back?
Yeah. I'll stay there next time. Apparently, Villarrica is one of the most dangerous and active of all the volcanoes in Chile, I'll have you know. Hmm? The last explosion was in 2015. Explosion, I'll have you.
That's not long ago, is it? I mean, we joke, but really,
and apparently there are killer cows. You know, I'd like to throw this one in.
I'm not going to ask
Sebastian and Marco
about that.
Were telling me about how their vineyards have been trampled by cows and eaten by cows.
Killer cows.
And they also get pretty hardy frosts there as well. So, you know, it's hardly a breeze. When I was there, I said, so, okay, lots of hard frost. What protection are you using against frost? Are you using sprinklers or fans? Marco said, he just said, that's way too expensive. And he pointed at this little statue of Saint Vincent, which they bought in Burgundy. And is obviously, I think it's the patron saint of vines, isn't it? So they just plonk this in the vineyard. That's their frost control.
Hoping for the best.
Yeah, fingers crossed. The fingers crossed method.
I love it. I love it. But interesting, they're not planning for fizz. Mm. You'd have thought that might be logical there. You know, it's good to be ambitious. You don't want everybody doing the same thing. On which note, actually, there is one last project, as we said. There were three projects that we wanted to talk about. Mm. One last one that you want to highlight that's doing something decidedly different, isn't it?
Yeah, so this is Viña San Pedro Tarapacá in Mayeco with the Mapuche community, Buchahuico.
I won't try and say that. But you could perhaps explain the context a bit.
Okay, so it's not easy to do this quickly, but I suppose the Mapuche are one of the indigenous people who were based in Chile before the Europeans arrived in the 16th century. The Mapuche are famously proud, determined to defend their lands in the south of Chile, really, and which they did very successfully, one of the most successful resistance movements. They did for about 300 years. In the end, they were finally conquered by the Chilean army in the late 19th century. Their lands were largely confiscated and put over to things like large-scale forestry, which is a big industry in the region now.
Wow, that must have created a lot of tension and over the years a lot of conflict too, I assume.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fair to say that the resentment has festered, really. The Mapuche community consider themselves disenfranchised. They consider themselves misrepresented by the press and marginalised, I think, on a wider scale by Chilean society and the authorities. And the tragedy is this is such a beautiful culture with tremendous heritage and knowledge.
But is wine part of that heritage?
No, it's not. Absolutely, it's not at all. Not really, because that was always brought by the Europeans. It wasn't really there before. Mm. Which is why this new project involving Mapuche and wine is quite surprising. But, you know, it's also exciting. So I wanted to find out more, really. So I visited Buchahuico in February with Viviana Navarrete, winemaker at Viña Leda, which is owned by Viña San Pedro Tarapacá, who's working on this project. And then afterwards, after sort of I gone away and thought about it, I wanted to talk to her again. So I asked her via Zoom to sum things up.
Well, the Buchahuico project started in 2015, so back 5 years ago, and it was the intention of San Pedro Winery to do something with the community, with the people, because Viña San Pedro has been working in sustainability quite a long time ago in terms of solar panels, in hydroelectric stations, in many things, but there was one column that they didn't work with, it was with people. So in that time, they started to say with which community we could work and in which appellation of origin in Chile. And besides that, in Chile, many people are looking into the south of our country because it's cooler, because it's unexplored, there's not enough experience, and it's a lot of challenge. And this, because of that, we arrived into Mayeco area, that is 600 kilometers down south from Santiago. It's a beautiful place. It has special conditions. And we ended up in Purén, which is a coastal area in Mayeco. It's at 38 kilometers from the Pacific Ocean. So it has both conditions. It is cooler because of latitude, because you move into the 38 degrees of latitude down south, and it's cooler because it has the maritime influence as well. And in Chile, the Pacific Ocean is very cold. And in this place, we started talking with people Mapuche, is the community, native community from Chile, and we arrived into Buchahuico, that is a place of 300 hectares with 70 family. We started talking with them and inviting them to start with the viticulture business, which was for them something totally new. They dedicate themselves to the forest business. And what happened with the community there that is very sad is that they don't have challenges for the new generations. I mean, there's not enough job for the young generations. So normally what happened with the family is that they split and the fathers remained in their houses doing agriculture, but the kids went to bigger cities as Concepcion or Temuco to earn money and to make the work. So the beautiful thing was that viticulture brought to them a possibility to have their own business, be vigneron, they are the owner of the vineyards, and they leave business for the future generations. So at the end, all the families will stay in this place, they will grow family generations, and they will have a beautiful business. And we started with them helping, of course, the government helped in DAP, the Comisión de Regadío, and we took investment from the government and from San Pedro. We gave money to the Mapuche for them to start with the investment, and we gave a lot of support in the technical area. So Pedro Izquierdo, whom you met, that is a famous consultant for viticulture, he went every 15 days to help the Mapuche to understand how important it was to plant the vines and to do all the work. And we started with Pinot Noir. We started with two families, but now we have six families involved. Every family has 2.5 hectares planted. And well, you saw the place. It's just so fascinating because they open the door of their houses and their garden is the vineyard. So you can't imagine how the beautiful care that they take of everything. It's just how they prune the vines, how they destem, how they take everything. It's their own work.
It's very, very impressive. So, having seen it, I can say the vineyards are absolutely impeccable. It was an absolute joy to see that the pride that they are taking in this work, which bodes very, very well. Just to wind back a little bit, Viviana, because I think maybe a lot of people might need the context explaining a little bit of the Mapuche, the indigenous people in Chile, their situation.
There's a lot of poverty in those people. There's a lot of pain in their heart. And unfortunately, what the now this generation see in the news is that just journalists show the bad side of Mapuche, that they like to fight, that they burn the trucks of the forest companies, etc. And it's really pity not to show the beautiful side of Mapuche, because yes, there are a few that are really tough people and they like war and they don't follow the laws. It's true, but there are a few. All the other communities of people are just lovely person. You met them. They are very honest worker people. They're good with their soul. And I think we need to show this to Chilean people, to the young generation and to the world, that Mapuche people are just fascinating as everybody. And they need help and they need the chance to develop their community and to grow.
You said to me when I was there that we learn as much from them as they do from us. Could you just explain what you meant by that?
Yes, the thing is that when we started to visit them 4 years ago, 5 years ago, we said, okay, we're going to teach them about viticulture and we're going to give them a possibility for develop their families and their business. And we saw that the viticulture was like a tool for development of the community. But then all of a sudden, as we visit them so frequently, we started to learn about their philosophy. First of all, the respect of nature. And it's weird that I say, because I'm agronomy and I work with nature, but sometimes when you are just in the industry and you're always like making things and making wine and bottling and selling and everything or traveling, you lose a little bit the connection to the ground. And they are so connected to the Mother Earth. In fact, they pray to the ground, to the earth. So it's their sensibility, it's their possibility of observation that although again, we work with nature, but at the end of the day, we lose that connection and that sensibility of observing. And I think it's not only my profession, but it's the generation today. If you see the young people, everybody wants immediate results. Everybody's just looking to the future. But come on, we have to take time to breathe and to observe. They read nature. So it really brought us more knowledge, more connection, and also the importance that they give to their family.
Last question. How do you see the future of this project?
I have a very ideal thing in my head about this. I think, well, fortunately, the first harvest sold out everything. And I think the project is so powerful, not only because it's Pinot Noir and it's in the south of Chile in a cooler area, but I think that the social thing is so important, Peter, nowadays, that I think this, I have a lot of I will that this project is going to be a success. And hopefully we can invite more people, more Mapuche people, families to come to this business, that there are a lot of people that want to plant their vines. But we say, okay, please wait, because we have to be responsible. We have to sell all the bottles, all the Pinot Noir. And when we have the return of the money, we can give back to the people and to invite more families to the project. I'm sure that we're going to end up with a lot of hectares and a lot of family involved. And Juan Curi has a beautiful dream. He dreams of making a winery, a cooperative winery, that they are the owners together with San Pedro, but that finally the Mapuche can do their wine there. So now we're helping them to develop this, but I hope that in the future they can do their own wine and they can do all the sales. That will be so beautiful, not only for Mapuche people, but for Chile as well.
And that area and the south of Chile is so exciting for the quality of its wines. As you said, it's wines that are really fresh and elegant and super fine. And I think we're getting a real sense of Chilean identity from these areas and these wines. So this all ties in beautifully. Viviana, thank you very much indeed.
So we've got the wine here, Tayu. Yep. It's got the most incredible label. I think we need to put a picture of this on the website. It's just this beautiful old face. I mean, I can't
it's
begin to describe how wonderful
that
those eyes are. So we'll put that on the website. And this is the Pinot Noir. Now, there was 2018 and 2019 Pinot Noir.
You got 2018, I've got the 2019. Yeah. 2018 was the first bottling that they did. But I think it's fair to say that 2019 is where the project really started getting going in earnest. So these wines are about £15, they're not in the UK market yet, about sort of $20-$25.
That's a lovely Pinot Noir, isn't it? I mean, really, really.
It is lovely. I mean, it's not perfect. The thing is with Pinot takes time, doesn't it, to get brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, I think what it lacks possibly is some concentration and real sort of fruit concentration on the mid palate. But you do have that lovely pale colour of Pinot and those sense that you want some of the summer berry and the earthiness. I mean, really, it's definitely a great start.
Well, I think it's not just simple either, is it? It's pretty complex. I think for the price, it's a really stonking Pinot Noir.
For the price, absolutely.
And but it's based around freshness and elegance and that sort of, as you're saying, sort of earthy, savoury, herbal complexity.
Yeah. I mean, the 2019, I think we tried this earlier as well, didn't we? And it's a different structure. It's a darker fruit.
It's got more intensity. It has got more of that fruit intensity to it.
Yeah.
And both work really well with food. And we tried them with, we have tried them with a couple of dishes, haven't we?
Yeah.
And I think that this project will go from strength to strength in that sense. You know, you look at the way this wine's going, it's already looking
hope so, wouldn't you?
Seriously good.
Yeah. If you've got somebody like Viviana making the wine, then, you know, that's going to work well, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, she's a superstar and I think she knows exactly what she's doing. She knows exactly what she's doing with Pinot. And Mayeco is going to be a brilliant region for the future of Pinot in Chile. So I think these are going to be stars in the future. I wish this project every success. I think we both do, don't we? It's groundbreaking in so many positive ways. And the whole idea is it to become self-sustaining. And that's really, really, you know, with the expertise of San Pedro, with the government funding together, those things are quite powerful propositions, I think. So, you know, I think Viviane told me that also that they're starting to make some Pinot Noir sparkling as well.
Which red is, or?
No, I think it's rosé. Like I think it's rosé.
Yeah.
But she's trying to get everyone to persuade them to plant things like Albarino and Riesling and Grüner Veltliner. I'm not sure if she's going to be able to do that because everyone wants to keep the focus, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah. You know. And more importantly, is it, in your opinion, really making a big difference to the community? I mean, do you honestly think that? I mean, because often we can say these things about these projects. Viviana obviously has an interest in wanting it to. You being there, did you look into the eyes of those people and think, yes?
Yeah, I did actually. It was one of the most special moments of the visit, just going and sitting down in the house with Don Juan and his son Juanito and his wife, who very kindly let us in. But she only let me in after she'd had a quick tidy up. She had a quick sweet round. And she barred us from entry until
Sir Richards is coming.
No, not really. I mean, and it was lovely. You know, I spoke to quite a few of the growers actually, and their families, and I met a lovely little girl called Peu Nien. And I hope I'm pronouncing that properly, Peu Nien, which took me, thankfully, I hadn't had too much wine to drink before that, otherwise I would have struggled to pronounce it. But she was wearing her traditional dress. And we'll put a photo on the site. I think I've got a bit of a video as well, actually. It was lovely. So she and her mother dressed in a very traditional dress to welcome me and then proceeded to take lots of photos on her bright pink iPhone of all of us doing for her
they
school.
They get everywhere,
for
don't
her
they?
School. But, you know, and so the first, going back, the first family who had planted were the ones I spoke to, the Curin family. And I wanted to play a little clip of this. I know it's in Spanish, but I thought it was just important to hear from these guys.
Mi nombre es Juan Daniel Curín Chicagual. Para nosotros el proyecto ha sido muy bienvenido porque lo ha gustado el trabajo, lo ha gustado también el proyecto y creo que va a ser un vino especial.
Okay. So what was he saying there?
Right.
Mr. Spanish.
He was saying various things, but he was introducing himself. He was also sort of saying how much they enjoy the work, how important it is. You know, he says later on that some people don't really dare to work with the Mapuche community. Mm-hmm. But this, as a result, could be really important for the Mapuche and the region and hopefully the world, is what he said. You know, the world gets a delicious wine, but it makes a massive impact on us. You know, and when I stopped rolling the recording as well, he and his sons both said, they got quite emotional and they said, you know, this historically has been a land of struggle. They said, una tierra de lucha. But that now, with this kind of project, the wounds are starting to be healed. And that was really powerful to hear,
moving,
actually.
It
was very, very
It's funny
moving.
Also when you stop recording, often that's when you get the really great stuff, as
know,
we know.
I know. But I hope they don't mind me saying that. But, you know, they also joke, though, about how much Viviana loved their Pinot Noir.
Well, it's good Pinot Noir.
Yes.
We all love it. So look out for the Tayou 1865. That's not the vintage. It's the name of the wine.
Yeah, the name
brand.
Actually, Tayou means ours in the Mapundungun language. So it's a lovely little thing. But do look out for it. Hopefully it'll be in the UK soon.
Yeah, it's not in the UK at the moment, no. Or the US. But it is in Chile, obviously. It's in Canada and Sweden, if you happen to be there. So anything else to add or to report?
Well, of course, there's lots. You know, there's a new project, really exciting new project by the Razzurri's winemaker Francisco Bettig. Really fantastic Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, sort of Burgundian style down in Mayeco. There's the Selva Oscura wines, which we tasted recently from La Ronciere, which has another cracking Chardonnay in there. There's even wine grown in a prison.
Wow.
Which is fantastic. Vigna Capitan Pastene, Raul is doing some brilliant stuff. But, you know,
that's
frankly, there's too much stuff to get excited about and mention. So probably I think time to wrap things up here for now. And hopefully we'll be back sort of revisiting these themes.
I think we must. But thank you. Thank you so much for listening. Please do keep your lovely reviews and ratings coming in. Keep your glass topped up during these strange times, maybe with Pinot Noir, Chilean Pinot Noir. And until next time, cheers.